Heino, it's Miss Heino. Everything inside you starts to shake up when your picture in the news appears. And the thrillish morning when you wake up with drops of makeup behind your ears. There's no people like show. People, they don't run out of door. Angels come from everywhere with lots of jack. And when you lose it, there's no attack. Where did you get money that you don't get back? Let's go on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Monday, June 4th, 2012. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this evening, we have Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia. Michael is a writer and photographer. You could see his writing and his photography at BroadwayStars.com. You could see his photography at FollowSpotPhoto.com. Michael also writes for other outlets such as Arts America and NPR. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening.
Also with us is Peter Felicia. Peter is a writer. You can read Peter's writings at the New York Star Ledger, where he writes very often, as well as Kritzerland on Friday, on Masterworks Broadway on Tuesdays, and in the MTI blog throughout the month. Good evening, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. So we are wrapping up the awards season, and this is our final predictions of what will happen next Sunday at the Tony Awards, and we'll talk a little about what we think will happen. Maybe we'll even throw in what we think should have happened instead, but we'll see how it progresses. But first, let's start off with a recap of the other evening. We had the Drama Desk Awards. So Peter and Michael, did you see any big surprises, or is this a precursor for what's going to happen at the Tonys? Peter, why don't you start us off with that?
Well, for me, the biggest surprise was Outstanding Book of a Musical, going to Joe DiPietro, because I didn't much like the book of Nice Work If You Can Get It. So that was surprising to me. I did expect that Harvey Fierstein would get it for Newsies, because he did work on that book that turned a Hollywood flop into a Broadway hit. So I'm not saying that it was art or anything like that, but I did fully expect that that would happen. I'm also surprised, too, that while I mean, Alan Menken was a shoo-in for Outstanding Music, the Drama Desk, which has a separate category for lyrics, they gave them to Once. And that surprised me a bit, because I expected that to go to Newsies as well. So it may sound odd, given the fact that I see the music and lyrics and book all going to Newsies. And yet I wasn't at all surprised to see Once win as Best Musical. That's been known to happen from time to time. The people who win those other prizes don't necessarily result in the Best Musical. It certainly happened on the 20th Century at the Tonys and with Into the Woods at the Tonys and other shows too. But I wasn't surprised at Once winning Best Musical. But, of course, for me, the best thing of the entire night was seeing that, Michael, you know what's coming, right? The Tracy Bennett one as Outstanding Actress in a Play for End of the Rainbow. She's awfully good. And I was very glad to see that she got that, because, as we've talked about endlessly on this show, this is a very controversial performance. But obviously there were enough yay-sayers than naysayers among the voters, and I'm hoping that's going to hold true at the Tonys next week, that we indeed see the same result for Best Actress in a Play. I would like that very much to happen. So, but otherwise, there was nothing that was really amazing to me. I was very glad the Tribes won as Outstanding Play, mostly because I like when off-Broadway shows win it, because so many times off-Broadway shows don't do terribly well at the Drama Desk Award. Essentially, if you get a Drama Desk nomination, that is your award when you're an off-Broadway show. So really, Outstanding Review was off-Broadway with The Best Is Yet to Come, the music of Cy Coleman, and the solo performance, that usually is an off-Broadway show too. This was Mr. Man. And the Unique Theatrical Experience is usually an off-Broadway thing, but the mainstream awards usually go to Broadway, and that held true this year. So that was no surprise at all.
Michael, what did you think?
Well, I certainly hope that we don't have the same result at the Tonys for Tracy Bennett. I don't think she should get awards for that performance. I think she should get sued for it. You know, I mean, I just, it's just so upsetting to me, really. I mean, seriously, we joke about it, but I just think it's character assassination, and I'm I'm so surprised at Peter and other people who I, you know, there's been a lot of that happening lately where people I respect greatly come out with individual opinions that make me say, what are you talking about? Patrick Pacheco, I looked through, I just glanced through the notes for the Porgy and Bess, the new recording of Porgy and Bess. Mm-hmm. And he at one point says something, talks about how the creators of this adaptation honor the original. They don't honor the original. They dishonor the original. What is he talking about? I mean, it doesn't compute in my brain. So I just have to kind of throw up my hands and say, I don't know. I have no explanation for it. But no, yeah, no.
So who would you, I'm not challenging you, Michael, honestly, but I respect your opinion. I mean, but who did you hope would win in that category?
I only have in front of me the winners. I don't have the nominees. Do you have them right
it's,
there?
It's Sinan Latin, by the way, Meet Vera Stark, Linda Lavin, The Lions, Jennifer Lim and Chinglish, Kim Martin Cotton, A Moon for the Misbegotten, Carrie Mulligan, Through the Glass Darkly, and Jolie Richardson for Side Effects.
Wow. You know, I didn't see Vera Stark. A lot of people love that play.
It was good.
And so I'm sorry I missed that. I would say, I guess I would say of the ones I've seen, I would say Linda Lavin, because whatever problems I have with that show, she certainly was not among them. I thought she's amazing. We have a very interesting situation here. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm very, very happy that Tribes won. Outstanding play. The only other play I can think of that I would rather have won over it was Sons of the Prophet, and that got a special Drama Desk Award, or at least its author did. But I think we have a very maybe unprecedented situation here where I think all of the nominees for the Tony Award for Best Play, all four of them were ineligible for Drama Desk because they all came from Off-Broadway. And were previously eligible in the previous season. Is that right, Peter?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Clybourne Park, Other Desert mm-hmm. Cities, Peter mm-hmm. and the Starcatcher, and Venus in Fur. So as we've discussed ad nauseum, a very small percentage of the Drama Desk Awards tend to go to Off-Broadway, even when Off-Broadway deserves it. But in this case, it even if for the not the best reasons, the best play came from Off-Broadway, and I think that's wonderful. Once is my least objectionable choice among the Broadway musicals, but I personally voted for Queen of the Mist, which I recommend the album to all of you. I think it's actually released as of this week or next week officially. And I thought that was a brilliant piece of work and really far superior to any of these. Let's see, going down. Danny Burstein for Follies was very happy to see that.
I agree.
We had Danny as a guest on the podcast. That was that was a wonderful night. Let's see. I think that although I despise Nice Work If You Can Get It, I think that Michael McGraw and Judy Kaye were the two best things about it. So I'm quite happy about that in that sense.
Michael once told me that when he got his Theater World Award, which I believe was for Swinging on a Star, at that time the award had a mask of comedy on one side and a mask of tragedy on the other side. And we would put the little plate on the front saying winner, Theater World Award, Michael McGraw, Swinging on a Star, on the happy-go-lucky side. But Michael swears that somebody made a mistake and his plate is on the tragedy side. So anyway, I hope that this award that he got was letter perfect in the right way it should be, because he's a terrific guy. And he really, what I love about the performance that he gives in Nice Work If You Can Get It, and that is even his posture is so right. It's a little stooped over. It's a little harried. He's playing a butler. He's never been a butler, but he has to play a butler to conceal his identity. And I mean, he's doing the best he can. He's weary. And I think the posture really suggests that very well. So I'm very happy for Michael.
Yeah, he's great in it. He was so great in Spamalot. And I don't know if it was his first big thing, but Michael certainly did a lot of Forbidden Broadway.
Yeah.
And I think it shows, he has that kind of wonderful ability to play these character roles and really quite different types too. But
I think he met his wife there. Do you know about this?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I know they both did it. I wasn't sure if one brought
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure
Tony
either.
Tony DeBono, a very talented lady as well.
Yes, so, Tony DeBono, yeah.
That was obviously a while ago because they have a kid who's 16 going on 17. So, yeah. So yeah. Good luck to both of them.
So, yeah, again, Forbidden Broadway, a great training ground for, for people. And it's coming back, so it'll train some more people.
That's maybe. Right.
I share Peter's... whatever the word is, surprise at the best book for nice work if you can get it.
Disdain the word you're looking
for? Yeah, I think I feel even more strongly against it because that was.
Well, looking at that category, you had Lysistrata Jones, Leap of Faith, Nice Work, The Shag's Philosophy of the World, Queen of the Mist, and Death Takes a Holiday. I what to pick of such riches.
Wow, so Newsies wasn't even nominated. That's what you're telling me? I'm very surprised. I thought it was. I just took
Boy, that is surprising, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I just took
very
surprising. That's, you know, there I am saying, oh, I thought Harvey was going to get it because I just assumed he was nominated. That's very interesting to me then under those circumstances. You know, what's also interesting is the swag factor here. Because they did send out very nicely bound, handsome scripts to Nice Work if you can get it. You know, and, you know, maybe that helped people. They said, oh, this is nice. You know, we'll vote for it. I can't imagine anybody reading it and saying, now I'm going to vote for it. I've been reading it because, here we go again, I'm doing this book on musicals that lost the Tony Award, and I assume this is going to be it in the, you know, one that isn't going to win. So so I've been going over with a fine-tooth comb, and it really reads pathetically, even to the point of which something that's in the script does not match something that's on stage, and I'll tell you what that is, because they say when they describe Jimmy, the main character, that he's, this is a quote, dripping with charm. Well, I don't get that from Matthew Broderick at all. You know, I don't get any charm, let alone dripping with it. So so under those circumstances, I found Nice Work to be more problematic as a result of reading it rather than, but who knows, maybe people just like getting the script, and maybe they did read it and thought it was hilarious, you know, so what's done is done.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's done. Yeah. yeah. The separate music and lyrics categories for Drama Desk. I never did get it. I still don't quite get it. I wish they would stop it. And I think it's weird. Outstanding review of The Best Is Yet to Come. The music of Cy Coleman. That's interesting because it didn't, first of all, it didn't run very long. And I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I necessarily would have picked it as the best. Sound design for Porgy and Bess, is that a case of people just like picking something because they really don't know anything about sound design? Because I don't think that had very good sound design at all.
I think there's a very big problem with all of us. I don't think any of us really can understand what good sound design is.
Yeah.
It's just beyond our purview. Yeah, I will say that last night when I was at Once in This Island at Paper Mill, I thought the sound design was terrific. It may not be, but I thought the sound was magnificent. Very good production, by the way, at Paper Mill of Once in This Island. And if you've never seen it, you must go. And I think a producer should bring it in. I really do. It hasn't been seen in 20 years, and it's a terrific production. And this lady from American Idol, Sayesha Mercado, really does an excellent job. She feels those lyrics. I know we're getting off topic, but nevertheless, if you've never seen Once on This Island, now's the time to do it in Millburn, New Jersey.
Well, that's I'm glad to hear that. It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, I couldn't join you last evening because I was getting back from vacation.
Oh, right, of course.
Definitely
yeah.
want to try to see it. Yeah.
Oh, do. Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I ever saw it. I couldn't believe how beautiful the music was. One song after the
other.
I mean, I it was almost like, you know, when you're given a box of chocolates and you eat too many. I mean, it was almost like, oh no, please, not another beautiful song. I don't know if I can process it. They're just all so beautiful. I want to remember the last one I just heard. You know, it was that sensational. So, you know, I realized last night he really is, Stephen Flaherty really is our John Kander of this generation, because John Kander was able to go into these foreign exotic locales. I mean, a lot of people have said, that John Kander's score for Zorba sounds more authentically Greek than Manos Hadjidakis' score for Ilya Darling. And Manos Hadjidakis was the real Greek, you know. So, and Stephen Flaherty, I mean, really, I will admit I'm not an authority on Caribbean music. But boy, it really sounds right to me. It just does. I mean, that steel drum feeling that he has in that music, I think, is perfectly executed. So, anyway, back to what we're talking about. I'm sorry.
No, don't be. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about Drama Desk.
Well, a couple of little points about Drama Desk in that Peter had mentioned that Tribes representing Off-Broadway was very nice. But don't you sort of feel like, is it possible, could we extrapolate that maybe Once is also representing Off-Broadway?
I don't think so. I know what you mean, of course. It did start there, but I don't think that's why it got the award.
Did you think? Do you think it's dramatically different from the Off-Broadway production?
What I do think, to be perfectly frank, is that most of the voters didn't see it off-Broadway and saw it on Broadway.
Yes,
okay,
that's
yes.
My theory.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's...
A press agent has often said to me, "We don't have critics anymore. We only have Broadway critics. They only want to go to the Broadway shows. They don't want to go anywhere else. There are so many people who call me up for tickets when it's a Broadway show, and if it's not on Broadway, they don't want to know about it." So that's my theory on that. I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm saying I suspect that Once This Award is a result of what's happening right now on 45th Street.
I'm sure you're probably right. And it's a continuing problem with Drama Desk, as we again have discussed several times over the recent weeks and months.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is that outstanding set design went to Ghost the Musical. What doesn't that kind of screw us up for next season? I mean,
Are you talking because there's so much electronic stuff? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, is Ghost setting a precedence there? And did you really think that it was an outstanding set design, or was it just very cutting edge, futuristic? We've not seen something like this before, or did it really deserve the outstanding set design?
I wonder if in the future that category will be changed to outstanding design, because it wasn't really a set design.
Right,
it was a design, but it wasn't a set design. So maybe they'll have best parentheses set, and then design without the parentheses. Maybe that'll happen. But obviously, people were very impressed with what they saw on the stage of the L'Enfantin. But nevertheless, is it set design? I see your point amazingly, James. I see your point. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Just for the record, I called up the credits. It's scenic design by Rob Howell, lighting design by Hugh Vanstone, sound design, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Projection designed by John Driscoll. Video designed by John Driscoll. And then there were, you know, other credits, obviously. So one would assume that they considered them those all together, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
I sort of remember when, you know, video started making its way onto Broadway stages and what they were trimming multimedia presentations. I'm trying to think of the earliest one that I can remember, and I'm sort of feel like Tommy or Civil War, Wild Horn Civil War, or something like that. They used a lot of dramatic, and was it the company Batwin and Robin that did a lot of stuff?
Right.
I think they were involved in Tommy too.
Yeah, I think they did both of those. Do you think that? Did those shows get recognized for scenic design? I wonder if this has been
recognized definitely in terms of a nomination, but I don't think that they won.
Well, I'm noticing here that actually the award for Ghost, the musical, for outstanding set design went to John Driscoll is the first one whose name, I guess, maybe alphabetically, but he is the projection and video designer.
Yeah,
and Rob Howell and Paul Keefe.
Yeah, that is alphabetically correct. Whether or not that's what they meant, we can only infer or guess. But for the record, Driscoll is first.
And the point is that they included the video and the projection design in the set design in giving the award.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All righty. So let's move forward a couple of days from last Sunday to the upcoming Sunday at the Tony Awards. And Michael and Peter, are you going to be attending the awards?
You know, I have to tell you, this year's form was so complicated and I had so much going on, I forgot to send in the form. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to make an issue of this. I have friends who get together every year for a party, and I'm never able to be there with them. And I thought, you know, this year I am going to go to this party. I'm going to have a good time with all my friends. So this year I'm sitting it out or standing it out or what have you. So even though I was invited, but I just didn't do the paperwork on time.
Well, Peter, I think we may have
Catholic school. Yeah.
I think ahead. No, I think we may have discussed this before. You normally when you go, you're in the press room, right?
Right.
Well, the one time I did the press room, I found it an extremely useless experience because, first of all, you miss as the evening goes on, you miss a great deal of the show.
Sure.
Because at first you don't, because no. There's nothing to do.
Nobody's
but watch
the show. Right.
But as soon as people start filtering into the press room, they turn off the feed. And,
yeah.
And and you're left to ask, and so you're missing the show. And on top of that, I mean, the year I went, nobody had anything interesting to ask.
Well,
because what are you going to ask them? You know, what are you
going
to
say? Well, last year was the nadir when it came to that. I couldn't believe how few questions were asked. I remember Kathleen Marshall, who won for Best Choreography. You think somebody asked one question? I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else. I was in the room. I could have asked a question. I couldn't think of anything. Nobody could. It seemed last year nobody cared very much in that room.
It was all Book of Mormon last year. Everything was all about getting to the next Book of Mormon speech.
Maybe it was, but I'm telling you, we had so few questions.
Yeah.
And, a lot of us have been doing it for so long. I think it might be that we've learned very little of what they say is of any particular interest or use. Because most people talk about how they're having such fun, and I mean, those quotes aren't interesting. So nobody wants to hear that.
Exactly.
I mean, we're glad you're having fun. Good luck to you. But I mean, you don't print that in a newspaper. So-and-so said she was having fun. We're all getting along wonderfully. And so-and-so's a genius. And it's all platitudes. So the only interesting thing I can think of all the years I've been covering the Tonys was when Alec Baldwin came in after Art won Best Play and upset Beauty Queen of Lin-An. And he came in and said, Beauty Queen of Lin-An really won. It's just that I think Art would make a good movie and I'd love to be in it. And I thought it would have a better chance of winning if I said that it won. I'm sure he was kidding. Or am I? I don't know. But anyway, that happened. That happened. And whether or
well,
not.
Well, actually, there was one very interesting thing that happened the one year that I was in the press room, because that was the year of Contact.
Funny, I was going to mention that too. That was going to be my second thing. Go ahead, tell me your story.
Well, and if you recall, there was a great deal of controversy as to whether Contact should have been.
Yeah.
And by the night of the Tonys, even though it won, Bernard Gersten was still extremely defensive about
it. Correct. I corroborate everything you're saying. It's a musical. Get over it.
Yeah, that's the quote.
Yeah, it was. That's exactly what he said. Yeah, yeah. But you don't get enough of that. Because people are happy. Even if there are hard feelings about things. Everybody's in a good mood. They just won a prize. Might be more interested going to the Losers Lounge. Not that there is such a thing, So this year, no. I think the comments are going to be much more pithy among a group of show freak friends than they'll be in that room.
I think you're right.
Well, I'm very concerned for those who are going to the awards, because at this last moment, this afternoon we found out that Royal Caribbean is sponsoring Hairspray's performance on the Tony Awards, and who has cruise wear at this point that we can wear to the Tony Awards?
This is a new low. I mean,
when the national tour of Mamma Mia performed a few years ago on the Tony Awards, I thought that we couldn't get any worse.
But this really is something I bet nobody has ever thought of, that someday a cruise line show would be on the Tonys.
And it's performing with a live broadcast from the middle of the Caribbean on the boat. I just...
It just fully reiterates...
If they hit an iceberg...
The show is... if they hit iceberg, indeed. Yeah, they should do Titanic. That'd be great. What this fully reiterates one more time is that this show truly is an infomercial, and there's no way around it. And on the other hand, let us remember that some years ago, I think I've mentioned this, going on the Tony website after the Tonys, there was a little poll, you know, why do you watch the Tonys? And it was like 64% watched because of the numbers, and like 12-18% watch because they want to hear who won. So if the, you know, in this era where there are so few variety shows, this is what passes for one, and as a result, that's why people tune in. So I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be very happy to see a song from Hairspray, especially people in the country who have done Hairspray or have seen Hairspray or just now catching up with Hairspray or like the movie or anything like that. Hairspray still has its fans. It's a good show. I mean, but it will be very interesting to see the level of talent doing this Hairspray. We may come away having greater respect for what the people who work on cruise ships. I hope that's what happens. I hope we say, wow, that's terrific. Or, wow, that was a great interpretation. I'm not counting on it. I'm not banking on it. But it would
well,
be nice.
But aside from all that, isn't it surprising? Because I mean, it's such a different kettle of fish. I mean, those shows are you know, in terms of they're under completely different jurisdictions in terms of unions and everything like that. So that's surprising to me.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it all comes down to follow the money.
Yes.
So let's get beyond the Royal Caribbean Cruise Hairspray production and talk about the most important night on Broadway, which is tonight, where President Obama and President Clinton are at the New Amsterdam Theater.
I know. I passed by
Was the security outrageous or what? Shutting down the whole block.
Yeah. If not, and it was interesting to see the marquee of Mary Poppins that we've been seeing, you know, forever to suddenly not be there. And to see Barack Obama and Bill Clinton's name on that marquee was really something. So, you know, by the way, you know, when you talk about June 10th being the most significant night of the year, it's also Matthew Murray's birthday. So,
yes, I was actually going to say that the night of the Tony Awards is Matthew's birthday. It is Matthew's birthday, and I think everybody should jump on Facebook and Twitter or whatever and wish him a happy birthday on that night, because it would be a nice surprise for him. I know that I will do it. So, so we've all assembled here this evening to actually talk about what's happening this Sunday at the Tony Awards. So why don't we start with that, and we'll start with, you know, what's your general impression of the evening going to be? Is this, do we have one front runner that's going to run away with everything right now, Peter, or do we?
The only front runner I see is Alan Menken for best score, given that he's never won before. And considering the competition is weak, that Bonnie and Clyde is the only real musical nominee that's really facing him, the other two being plays, I fully expect that that's going to happen. So I have no doubt about that whatsoever. I have no doubt about the best revival category. I'm certain that Death of a Salesman will win. And it's too bad in a sense, because the best man would have won in other years, and that would have been fine with me as well. I expect Follies to win best revival. I'll be surprised if it doesn't, but I don't think that's a lock. It's as close to a lock as I can give. And as much as I've gone to bat for Tracy Bennett, I don't see that as a shoe-in by any stretch of any imagination. So, no, the only one that I really, really am certain about is Alan Menken.
All right, Michael, what's your overall take on this? Is there any big leaders out there?
Well, I'm always very bad at that, to be honest. I'm much better at discussing what I think should win than what I think will win. I'm really, really quite bad at it, and I don't know how people do it who win these Tony polls, et cetera, because there's so many variables and so many things to try to second guess. But but I do agree that I don't think that it seems like there are many clear locks, and not necessarily any one that's going to sweep, although some people are saying that they feel that Once might have something of a sweep, because I guess of the competition being so poor in general.
Certainly Once is doing a lot of the marketing and campaigning, if you will.
And kind of like a sort of like an echo of the, in a way, sort of the Avenue Q situation where the small show, people vote their heart instead of voting the budget, you know. And it is, it is a very compelling emotional story about characters, as opposed to some of the other things that are not, that are maybe a little too overblown. So, but I don't think even that's a given by any means. So I guess we're really going to have to see.
All right. So let's run down the categories here. I'll name the category and the nominees, and you guys tell us quickly what you think. So best play, Clybourne Park, Other Desert Cities, Peter and the Starcatcher, and Venus and Fur. Peter?
I think it's going to be Clybourne Park. I think that is the front runner of the desert. Frankly, the way they're listed alphabetically to me is exactly the way that I expect the voting to go. That Other Desert City would finish second if we ever knew how many votes everybody got, which would be very refreshing. It happens in political campaigns. I don't see why it can't happen in award shows. We know exactly how many votes everybody got. So I do think it's going to be that COPV situation. Clybourne, Other Desert Cities, Peter and the Starcatcher, Venus and Furs, in that order.
Michael?
Yeah, I hope Peter and the Starcatcher will win, but I doubt that it will. I guess my second choice would be Other Desert Cities, and then Venus and Fur. And my last would be Clybourne Park, because I just
oh, how funny.
Get it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's right. You did have issues with it.
Just,
I remember that.
Just do not get it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Best musical, Leap of Faith, Newsies, Nice Work If You Can Get It, and Once. I know Michael's going to pull for Nice Work, but Peter, what do you think?
Clearly, this is a two-show race, and I do believe this is going to be one of those years where the voters can reward themselves and pat themselves on the back for giving it to the little show as to the big show. Some people say there's really a bias against Disney. I don't believe that's true. I really don't. It may be true, of course, but I don't believe it's true. And as a result, that's not the reason I'm not picking Newsies. I just have a feeling that people are more charmed by Once than they are by Newsies. Newsies is a very angry show, and we're living in an angry time, certainly. But I do think that the sweetness of Once is going to help it to get the award.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Michael?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's much to admire in Newsies, but also much to really horrify one. some of the new material is just really, really not good at all. So I think Once, if only in terms of consistency, consistent goodness, I think we'll get it. Leap of Faith was quite a mess, I thought, with the best of intentions, but they didn't pan out. And Nice Work If You Can Get It is the fact that it has been nominated is a blot on the Tony Awards, and I don't have anything else to say about that.
There have been so many blots on the Tony Awards that paper is now totally blue from all the ink spills that are on it.
All right, in the best book of a musical, we have Liz Estrada Jones, Newsies, Nice Work If You Can Get It, and Once. So I'm assuming it's going to fall similar to the best musical. What do you think?
Yeah, whether or not they're going to feel that Harvey deserves it because he took this Hollywood flop and made it into a Broadway hit. But I think they're going to go for Once for this as well. This Enda Walsh. Not Edna, but Enda. It's a guy. I think there's an excellent possibility that that's going to happen there as well.
Yeah, I only recently found out that it was a guy, by the way. I guess I just, I did my silly thing with it. Yeah, I realized, if it was Italian and it ended in an A,
I understand.
If it was Spanish, it would be a girl. But no, it's a guy. So,
more than one show freak thought that Bono had a group called The Edge when Spider-Man was out. So not that The Edge was a genuine human being on his own. So don't feel bad, Michael.
Well, anyway, yes, Enda Walsh is a gentleman, and yes, I think that deserves it.
This is a man. We don't know if he's a gentleman. He might be terrible, but anyway.
Oh, that's true.
This is true.
I'm sure he's very nice.
I'm sure he's
Yeah, Liz Estrada Jones, you know, I thought it was too clever by half the book, although I had greatly admired some of Douglas Carter Beane's previous work. But I'm sort of surprised it's in there. But I guess, again, lack of competition. And
yeah, sure.
And Nice Work If You Can Get It is another big, 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 big blot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Best Original Score, Music and Lyrics Written for the Theater, Bonnie and Clyde, Newsies, One Man, Two Governors, and Peter and the Star Catcher.
Now, I've made my feelings
known. This is an interesting category, isn't it? Because it's usually Best Original Score, Music and Lyrics Written for a Musical. You know, not that the category is ever
for
called that,
years,
but, you know.
For a few years, it's been stressed this way as yeah. score written for the theater. Yeah. So they have been using that loophole for a while.
Have they, Peter, have they called it that even in years when all of the shows have been musicals?
I would say I'm guessing now, I would say that this new terminology is about 5 to 7 years old. So no, when in the olden days.
No. I meant during those years. I mean, have there during those years not been years when every show was a bona fide musical? And did they still call it written for the theater? I think they
I don't
did.
Think so.
I think
no,
written
I say,
for the theater is new.
No, I say that's around yeah. 5 to 7 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Peter, what do you think is going to happen here? It's
definitely
gonna,
Newsies. No question.
Michael?
In a romp.
Yeah.
I guess, but I wouldn't it be funny if Bonnie and Clyde won?
It's not going
to
happen.
No, it wouldn't be funny.
Alrighty. You know, a lot of people are going to vote for Bonnie and Clyde, hoping that when Frank Wildhorn hears his name called, that he'll have a heart attack and die. Now, that may very well be the case because there are so many people, of course, on Broadway who hate Frank Wildhorn. That
and I want to point that you're not one of you don't hate the person Frank Wildhorn, Peter. I think you've said
not at all.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I'm just
said
reporting,
nice things about,
but
yeah.
the vitriol that people have yeah. given Frank Wildhorn. Over the years has been palpable, and under those circumstances, I'm not giving my own personal feelings here.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had good times with Frank Wildhorn. I've even danced at his wedding. I don't mean professionally. I mean, I was invited to the wedding and Linda and I danced when they said, well, everybody can get up and dance. But all things considered, he is pretty reviled. It's a knee-jerk reaction now. I mean, people don't even, you know, think about whether the music's good or bad. It's now, if it's Wildhorn, it must stink.
Wonder if he would write under a pseudonym.
Yeah, I'm going to answer that question. I'm going to say he would not. And the reason he would not is because there's no question that he has a very healthy ego.
Little ego,
and it wouldn't
yeah.
be any fun for him to not have his name on something. So,
well, even if he wrote like a Cyrano, which we just hear is coming back to Broadway again.
Well, the play, yeah.
yeah.
He has worked on a Cyrano.
Yeah.
I don't know at what state or how serious is about it. But I saw him at the Drop a Desk party, and he was full of beans. I mean, he was saying, I'm not bitter. I'm not discouraged. It doesn't matter. I'm opening an office in Tokyo, you know, so on and so forth. Let's do a book, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, and he seemed, you know, pretty happy. I think he's been very happy to get recognized to this degree. And also, given this, there are so few Bonnie and Clyde nominations, I guess he can say to himself, well, I did my work. Whatever the problems were, they obviously weren't mine because I'm getting this nomination, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good possibility.
Well, you know, we have a very unfair situation that exists in this category, I have to say for the record, because I think, although I know Peter does admire at least one of the new songs in Newsies, but I think there's a general agreement that if Newsies wins, most people will be voting on the basis of the songs that are carried over from the film when they really, really should not be, because those songs should
written
technically
for the theater, yeah.
It should not be eligible. And that is the reason why Once was not eligible at all in this category, because none of the songs was new. And it was decided that because in the case of Newsies, slightly more of the score is new, that the whole thing should be eligible, which makes no sense to me. And I think,
well, I think this goes back to 1974 when Gigi won. I thought that was a terrible thing happening then. And I could be wrong about this, but my recollection is when they said, and the winner is Alan J. Lerner and Fred Lowe for Gigi, I recall a silence in the audience. The people were stunned that it had happened, because that was really the first lowering of the bar where best score was concerned, because, you know, needless to say. And by the way, I mean, there was a lot of good new stuff in that Gigi, especially that 9-minute sequence called The Contract.
Right.
Which is a great achievement in Alan J. Lerner's perhaps last great burst of glory. But nevertheless, the fact remains that most of the songs that we knew and loved were there for, you know, 15 years already. So it goes back to then. It's funny because the Broadway musical wasn't that unhealthy then that had to happen that year. I would have rather seen it gone to Raisin for the same reason. It was at Raisin.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of nice stuff in Raisin.
But, you know, as I think we also pointed out, Peter, they didn't, like in the case of State Fair.
Yeah, that was strange.
They were very, very specific.
Yeah.
I'll never forget this.
That, yeah, I agree.
That the only songs that were eligible were like two songs. And
well,
it
might have been four, but the point is it was certainly the songs that were not in the State Fair movie.
Right.
You know, that's well, of course, every committee is different, you know, and I mean, that's what that committee wanted that day. I was reminded just yesterday, just out of the blue, thinking, I think it was the Outer Critics Circle, the year that Annie was up for awards. They didn't vote it Best Musical. They voted it, and I quote, Most Refreshing Musical. Yeah, I mean, you know, so, yeah, by the way, it might have been Drama Desk, but it's one of those organizations. Definitely, Annie got the award of Most Refreshing Musical. You know, so, I mean, different nominating committees are going to do different things. And so, that State Fair that year, that 96 year, it was definitely a case where that committee decided, well, no, we're not going to have those old songs. This is what we're going to do. And
well,
you bet the State Fair got no votes at all. I mean, really, who would vote
right.
for, you know, a few songs?
Yeah, but I of course I understand why it has to, I suppose, change from year to year, but that doesn't make it any more fair, you know.
No,
it really doesn't.
No, but every awards, you know, they're all littered with these inconsistency and strange little quirks. So we shouldn't be surprised. Though it does seem, frankly, the Tonys have more than the Emmys or the Oscars or the Grammys even.
Yeah,
yeah. The quirks are quite definite here.
All right. Best revival of a play. I think we pretty much have all succumbed to Death of a Salesman, but the other plays in the category are Gore Vidal's The Best Man, Masterclass in Wit, and...
Nice revivals, by the way.
Yeah. Are we all in agreement here that Salesman is going to walk away with this?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. The only one I would really discount is Masterclass, and only because I dislike the play so much, but I thought it was quite a strong production, and Tyne Daly was excellent. This would be a very hard category for me to vote in.
In best revival of a musical, we have Evita Falli's The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess and Jesus Christ Superstar. So
I imagine
it's
Porgy and Bess
two horse.
If Porgy and Bess win, Michael will throw himself in the East River, you know. So, I think this is one where Follies is finally going to get some sort of major award because, of course, it didn't get the Tony back in 72, and it didn't get it with the revival that happened at the turn of the century, because that one was rather putrid. So I think it's time to give Follies its due.
Now, remind me here, when a revival wins at the Tonys, who goes up? The producers?
Yeah, the producers are listed as
under
the nominees. So as a result, I would think it would be the producers.
So it wouldn't even be Sondheim getting up there.
Well, I think it's...
Obviously, they'll have him up, you know, but I'm not sure he'll get a prize. I wonder if he'll even be there. You know, what's also interesting is, of course, when Sondheim wrote that letter condemning Porgy and Bess, did he ever realize at that point in time that his show would be up against it? You know, because at that point, Follies wasn't coming in, you know, and all that. So there's a slight irony there.
It's like a Greek tragedy there.
Yeah,
that's
right.
True.
Yeah, so that's...
Michael, did you weigh in on this? I'm sorry.
No, but I think Follies was definitely the strongest production overall. Although
that's a sentimental favorite.
Yeah. Although I liked Evita, I did, and
I did too.
Evita and Superstar. It's so interesting that you know they had such strong buzz out of town, and they got into town, and it's just everybody's like, oh yeah, they're good too, but they're not running away with any thunderous applause right now.
Well, last I checked, Evita was doing quite well at the box.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. But yeah. Again, we expected that lady was going to be a blockbuster performance that people are going to talk about now and forever. And that hasn't turned out to be the case.
It seems like Ricky Martin is carrying at least the weight of the box office right
now. Good point. Yeah, I bet you're right.
So, best performance of an actor in a leading role in a play, James Corden in One Man, Two Governors, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, James Earl Jones in Gore Vidal's The Best Man, Frank Langella in Man and Boy, and John Lithgow in The Columnist. Peter?
I do see Philip Seymour Hoffman winning this prize. Yeah. It's one of those situations where traditionally people who are given serious roles tend to wipe the floor with people who have comic roles, because certainly James Corden is really good in One Man, Two Governors, and in many years would win the prize. I wouldn't want to see James Earl Jones get it, because I don't find this a leading role by any stretch of any imagination. I'm delighted for him. You know, may he live to be 100, but still, I can't see that in that category. And it was nice for John Lithgow to be recognized, and Franklin Joel, to me, that he did a very good job, but that play was terribly disappointing. It was the show I was looking forward to most this whole season, because I'm a big Terrence Rattigan fan, but I have no questions whatsoever why it failed in the 63-64 season now. None.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, frankly, that Langella was even nominated, only for the reason that Peter just said, and also that show was so early in the season.
That's a good point.
For those two reasons, I'm surprised. I mean, he was terrific as always, but that really kind of surprised me. And as for James Corden and Philip Seymour Hoffman, this is one of those cases where it's not even apples and oranges; it's like apples and asparagus. You know, I mean, how can you even compare the brilliant comic performance of James Corden in One Man with the brilliant dramatic tear your heart out performance of Philip Seymour Hoffman in Death of a Salesman? They should both get a Tony Award.
Yeah, who knows? There have been ties, you know, I mean, so it may happen again.
Like my son's soccer tournament, everybody gets a trophy.
That's right. Well, that's why they have these nominations.
Anyway. All right. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play.
Who are you asking?
Nina
first?
Arianda, Venus and Fur, Stockard Channing, Other Desert Cities, Linda Lavin, The Lions, and Cynthia Nixon in Wit.
You left out one.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
Oh, which one was that?
Boy.
Oh, look at that.
You must be so happy, Michael, that was left out.
Tracy Bennett. It ended
you know?
I've heard
Freud
that.
Freud says there are no accidents, James, you know, so. Michael, who do you want to win here? I guess Linda Lavin, you said, right?
But I don't know. But Cynthia Nixon is part of the mix, and I thought she was wonderful.
She was.
This is a tough one. This would be a tough one for me, and also Nina Arianda. I mean, the only one I hated was Tracy Bennett. So I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not saying Tracy Bennett's going to win. I'm only saying I believe that Tracy Bennett should win. Nevertheless, it's such a controversial performance. I don't see it as a slam dunk by any stretch of any imagination. So whoever wins other than Tracy Bennett, I'm going to say how nice for you. But I'm not going to feel that justice was served.
Well,
yes.
I hope that someday in the future somebody writes a really bad play about someone that you...
that's a very good point, Michael.
Some performer that you hold dear, and that somebody goes on stage and gives a third-rate impersonation of that person, and people go all crazy about that person anyway because of there's so much drama and there's so much, you know, it's so much angst and so much energy on stage. And when that happens, then you'll know how we feel.
An excellent rebuttal. I see your point entirely.
Okay.
I'll have to wait for Hasselhoff the musical to come out. All right. Best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical. Danny Burstein in Follies, Jeremy Jordan in Newsies, Steve Kazee, is it?
Kazee.
I always get that wrong. Steve Kazee in Once, Norm Lewis in The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, and Ron Raines in Follies.
He's the only one who has no chance, Ron Raines.
Yeah.
But the other four certainly all have a real shot at this.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like there's a lot of talent up there, and it's hard, again, to match them up against each other. But I think that Danny Burstein's is a very popular person in the Broadway community.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that's going against Danny Burstein here is the fact that that is not quite the leading role in Follies, because yeah. really Ben is the more pungent part in that show. So that is the one thing that's working against him. But yes, he was terrific in it. I'll never forget in The Right Girl how wonderfully he moved. You know, he moved much better than I would have guessed he would have. So I would love to see him get it. I don't think Steve Kazee will get it because he spends much of his time reacting. But there's been a groundswell I've noticed lately for Norm Lewis. And that won't surprise me if that happens.
Norm Lewis is also a much beloved person. All of these people are beloved in the...
Absolutely right.
So it's going to be a very tough thing. I wonder, is Danny going to come in from the West Coast? They're doing Follies out in the West Coast. Is he going to come in for the evening?
Well, the last we heard was that their last performance is the previous night.
Oh, that's right.
I suspect he'd be there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that they'd give him the night off, even if, you know, so, but.
There's very heavy campaigning and Newsies and Once. The producers are campaigning very heavily. So who knows what's going to happen in this category? This is going to make and break a lot of different Tony Award contests that are going to happen that evening.
I think you're right. I certainly share the love for Norm Lewis, but I think for me, just the problems with the production and also the fact that there were some vocal issues might possibly work against him. Follies. Ron Raines. I've been a huge fan of Ron Raines for years, and I was glad to see him kind of get this really excellent showcase. And Steve Kazee, I thought, did a fantastic job, even though he was basically somewhat miscast in 110 in the Shade. So I'm very happy for him because I think he's much more felicitously cast this time. And Danny, you know, as I've said, is one of my all-time favorites. Mm. So I'm very happy for him. I think that possibly Jeremy Jordan might have an edge in, first of all, his youth, but also such a really interesting story with him this year. Going from and really, really looking like he wasn't even going to be able to do Newsies because of Bonnie and Clyde, and then that just folding so quickly, just in time for him to go into the other.
Jeff Calhoun swears to me they were looking for other people because they never expected Bonnie and Clyde to shutter so quickly.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
All right. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical: Jan Maxwell for Follies, Audra McDonald for The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Kristen Milioti for Once, Kelly O'Hara. Nice work if you can get it. And Laura Osnes in Bonnie and Clyde. So
I think she's the only one that doesn't have a chance. Yeah. But you know, Kelly O'Hara really carries that show. When she comes on, you know, after you've spent a lot of time with Matthew Broderick, and she comes on, the stage really does light up. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Kristen Milioti wins this prize for Once. I know a lot of people think Audra's going to win her fifth Tony. Be fine with me, frankly. But nevertheless, they may feel that Audra's had plenty of Tonys, and that's the case. Jan Maxwell, that really is the leading role in Follies, and we're much more interested in that couple than we are in Buddy and Sally. So as a result... but somehow, you know, that one is a little while ago. And, you know, the other three are with us right now. So I think there's an excellent possibility it's going to go to somebody who's doing it right this moment. And but I see it as a three-way race, but not not as an intense three-way race. So, but... I'm just going to go out on a limb and predict an upset for Kristen Milioti.
All right. Michael?
I agree with you, Peter.
Do you really?
I wouldn't be at all surprised if she. I personally didn't love her. I thought she was a little too more of a construct than a human being.
But as you said, I didn't like her at all.
but nevertheless,
you know, I think people are really taken with her.
Right, but so. I think you also made the point that she's playing the role exactly as written.
That's right.
So for whatever that's where I would be very sorry if Audra wins, because I think she was largely the architect of this desecration of Porgy and Bess. And on top of that, I don't think she's really very good in it. I think she's acting in a style that is inappropriate for this show, the character, and for a musical. It's too scrappy. It's too dark, too hard. I've heard people call her luminous. Even if you love her in it, I think that's the opposite word.
Right,
I mean, she's not luminous. Yeah. Means, you know,
sure.
filled with light. That ain't best, right? Yeah, no, really not. So, so I guess I would personally go for Jan Maxwell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be fine with me, by the way.
Though I love Laura Osnes.
Yeah, no, Jan Maxwell, after all, has been a pro for a long time and has delivered a lot of good performances. Yeah. One of the best I've ever seen. Back in Lincoln Center some years ago when she was in a play called The Bad Friend, and she was magnificent in that. So there may be a lifetime achievement type of award that goes to Jan Maxwell here, and that'd be fine with me.
Just want to go on the record, just in case she's listening, I'm firmly in the Kelly O'Hara camp.
We know.
All right. So best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play, Christian Borle for Peter and the Starcatcher. Michael Crumsey in End of the Rainbow, Tom Eden in One Man, Two Governors, Andrew Garfield in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, and Jeremy Shamos in Clybourne Park. Peter, what do you think?
Well, Andrew Garfield, after all, is a reasonably famous name, and sometimes that likes to that gets rewarded at the Tonys. You know, the up-and-coming actor, let's get him before Hollywood gives him an Oscar, you know, that type of thing. I would love to see Christian Bull get it for Peter and the Starcaster. It's an amazing performance. He might have some shine on him as a result of the Smash series. We now know who he is. Somebody was telling me they were at a party recently, and everybody was surrounding Christian Borle.
Right, that
he was, you know, like catnip. So, and of course, it's the TV series that's doing it. But he is magnificent in Peter and the Starcatcher, and I am hoping upon hope that he wins the prize. I'm delighted Michael Crumsey was nominated. Delighted. I thought it was a terrific performance, but I don't think he has a chance in the world of winning, and I don't think he thinks so either. It's interesting that Tom Eden won for One Man, Two Governors in the Drama Desk race, so I guess we can't discount him that easily. And I like Jeremy quite a bit in Clybourne Park, but nobody in this category for me can touch Christian Bale and Peter and the Starcatcher.
All right, Michael.
I would agree 100%. Christian is magnificent. He's just, I thought so off Broadway, and I thought so again on Broadway. And he, as I said, there again, it really looked like they were going to have to do the show on Broadway without him because of his being busy with Smash. But they somehow worked it out, largely because Smash was filmed in New York. So I literally said to several people, I cannot imagine them doing it without him. So I almost thought maybe it was one of those things where they knew he was going to do it all along, and they just were keeping quiet about it. But I don't think so. I think there really was a very good chance that they were going to have to recast it. And I'm so glad that they didn't have to, because he's great, great, great in it. But I wouldn't be sorry, and I certainly wouldn't be remotely angry if any of these people won. Michael Crumsey, as much as I hated End of the Rainbow, he did manage to give a very warm and well-rounded performance, I thought. Tom Eden was sheer brilliance in what comparatively little he had to do in One Man, Two Governors. And I wouldn't be remotely sorry if he won. I think that would be great, although he probably won't. Mm-hmm. Andrew Garfield, although I think I said at the time, although I disagreed with a lot of his individual choices, I thought he was very compelling on stage in Death of a Salesman. And he had at least two moments that were among the finest I've ever seen on stage, when he absolutely crumpled when he found out about his father being unfaithful to his mother. That was an amazing moment. And then his monologue at the end, where he basically breaks through all of the lies and the facade and says, I'm no good, and we have to face facts here. That was another moment that I will never forget. Mm. And Jeremy Shamos, although again I did not like Clybourne Park, I've loved him in many a show off Broadway, and
a charming actor.
Yeah, and he's really excellent at doing like befuddlement and nervousness and awkwardness on stage. I don't think anyone can do it better than him.
He has genuine flop sweat. because that's what his characters need to have. So that's terrific.
Very strong category, best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play.
All right, the next category is best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play. We have Linda Emmond. Did I get that correctly? Emmond?
I've never heard it said.
Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. Spencer Caden in Don't Dress for Dinner. Celia Keenan Bolger for Peter and the Starcatcher. Judith Light in Other Desert Cities. And Condola Rashad for Stickfly. Peter.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people have been predicting Spencer Caden in Don't Dress for Dinner. And I'll tell you what I didn't like about her. It's not her performance. Her performance was fine. But she's a slight lady. She's a small lady. She's got a tiny face and pinched features, and I think you need a bigger face for farce. So I do not think that she should win this prize. So, I'd go either with Linda Emmond, whatever it is, and Judith Light. I would say it's a two-way race between them. And given the fact that Judith Light has been doing more and more stage work and be getting more and more acclaim for it, I'm going to suggest that it's going to be she.
Yeah.
Michael? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be her as well. She's also, talk about beloved in the community. Judith Light is extremely beloved, aside from being a fantastic actress. Condola Rashad was terrific, but that was so long ago, Stickfly. Celia Keenan-Bolger, I love her in Peter and the Starcatcher. I'm so glad she's nominated. I don't know if she'll win. Spencer, I thought, was great in Don't Dress for Dinner. And Linda Emmond, I loved her until the final monologue over Willie's grave at the end. And I guess she made a choice to play it very unsentimental, and I did not like the choice. So that disappointed me.
In the next category is Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Musical. Philip Boykin in Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Michael Cerveris in Evita, David Alan Grier in Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Michael McGrath in Nice Work, Michael McGraw in Nice Work If You Can Get It, and Josh Young in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Michael, I've got a question. Who would you rather see win, Tracy Bennett or Josh Young? Because you've certainly had issues with Josh.
Well, it's a record. It's a separate thing. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I know it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I am just surprised that he got all these nominations when he was out for so many critics' performances. But I don't obviously know exactly when people went to see these shows.
Four of these five people are going to be at the Theatre World Awards tomorrow because Josh Young has won, Philip Boykin has won, David Alan Grier is going to present to Philip Boykin because he's in Porgy and Bess, and Michael Cerveris is going to do a number. The only one who's not going to be there is Michael McGraw, who, by the way, is a Theatre World Award winner too. So, it's kind of, so this is a full category for us, as a matter of fact. I don't know if people, we talk about whether people think that Audra needs another Tony. I'm not sure if they think Michael needs one, frankly. So, Cerberus, that is. So I'm not sure that he's going to get it. And if Josh Young's attendance record is as bad as everybody says it is, then I imagine a lot of voters just didn't see him and will not vote for him. So, it, it, it may very well be one of these upsets, and Philip Boykin might very well get it. What do you see, Michael?
Yeah, I don't know. On the other hand, this might be not that people vote this way, but this might be a place to honor nice work if you can get it through Michael McGraw. As I said, I do think he was
Fine with me.
One
fine
of the best things
wins,
in it.
Yeah.
All right. Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a musical. We have Elizabeth Davis in Once, Jane Houdyshell in Follies, Judy Kaye in Nice Work If You Can Get It, Jesse Muller in On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, and Divine Joy Randolph in Ghost the Musical. Peter.
Well, I remember when Judy Kaye won for Phantom of the Opera, I later asked her about it, and she said, yeah, that was a Lifetime Achievement Award, because I felt bad I didn't get it for 20th Century that I wasn't even nominated. So who knows? Maybe they'll find it's another people say that was another life. Maybe this is another Lifetime Achievement Award. Who knows? On the other hand, Jane was one that a lot of people thought was going to win a few years ago for the Lisa Crone play. Well, and it didn't happen. So it's not impossible to try to make it up to Jane. And again, maybe she represents all of the Follies ladies. One could look at it that way. Jesse Mueller, terrific performance of Clear Day. She's getting a Theatre World Award tomorrow. I don't even know who Elizabeth Davis was in Once.
Isn't that odd?
Oh, you too. You feel that way?
Well,
and the ghost, the character, the black lady in Ghost, who played the Whoopi Goldberg role, she certainly did her job. But I'm surprised that she made it into the list. Maybe that was throwing Ghost a bone. So I guess it's going to be Judy Kaye. I'd be very happy if Jane won it, though. That'd be fine with me.
I'd be happy with Jane. Judy or Jesse Mueller, but I hope it's Jesse Mueller, although I doubt it, but that would be wonderful. I just loved her in that show.
She was terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that we had enough voters to go see that in order to make that possible.
So I think you're right.
I think it's down to Jane and Judy as well.
Yeah.
All right. Best direction of a play. Nick Heitner in One Man, Two Governors, Pam McKinnon in Clybourne Park, Mike Nichols in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, and Roger Reed and Alex Timbers in Peter and the Star Catcher. Peter.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Mike Nichols has won too many awards, too, and I don't think they're going to need to give him another one, even though it was a terrific production of Death of a Salesman. I have a feeling the lady's going to win it. I think Pam McKinnon's going to win for Clybourne Park.
Michael?
That's so interesting. I mean, on the other hand, that people might say, you know, how wonderful, like, to give a nod to old Broadway and in the person of Mike Nichols, especially since he did do such a terrific
job. He did do a terrific job, and he's 80
job. In the apples and oranges area, again, you know, how can you compare that directing Death of a Salesman with Peter and the Starcatcher? I mean, one could argue that there's a lot more creativity in staging something like Peter and the Starcatcher.
So, I agree.
So I wouldn't even begin to try to pick between those two, because to me it's like, you know, giving an award to a car or an app, you know, an apple. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let me ask you both a question about, you know, what I sort of see as when shows start to get on a roll and they end up with an award after award after award, and it could possibly happen with Death of a Salesman, you know, where people just check off the category because, you know, is it possible that Death of a Salesman will just win everything that they're nominated for? If that'll happen. Possibly could happen in this category.
Mm-hmm.
And also, from a historical standpoint, Peter, have there been a lot of categories where they have two people in Best Direction, like Roger Rees and Alec Timbers, and have won?
One that comes to mind immediately is Follies, originally back in 72, because that was Harold Prince and Michael Bennett. When one looks back at that, that's pretty amazing that Michael Bennett was able to wrest half of that credit from Harold Prince. I mean, that must have been a very interesting meeting in that office, because up until that point, after all, you know, Hal directed alone, you know, and that was a good 10 years that he was directing alone. And to say to be gracious enough, really, to let Michael Bennett, his choreographer, after all, in on that was quite a concession when you really think of it. And, of course, they won. as well they should have.
I think another example was Tommy Tune and Tommy Walsh.
That's right. Yeah.
But was that a direction or a choreography award?
I think that was choreography.
Yeah.
So in the Best Direction Ever Musical, we have Jeff Calhoun for Newsies. We have Kathleen Marshall for Nice Work If You Can Get It. Zion Paulus for The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. And John Tiffany for Once. Peter.
To me, it's between John Tiffany for Once and Jeff Calhoun for Newsies. And I see Tiffany winning by an eyelash.
Hmm. Okay. Michael?
Yeah, well, I do think it's a race between those two, and I suspect it might be Tiffany. But again, Kathleen Marshall and Diane Paulus, they shouldn't be nominated for awards. They should be getting citations and dragged into court for wrecking the good name of George and Ira Gershwin and DuBose Hayward in one case.
I tell you, if Nice Work and Porgy and Bess sweep, we're going to have to send a straitjacket over to Michael.
Yeah. I already got my medication is all set up.
Right.
Best choreography, we have Rob Ashford and Evita, Christopher Gattelli. Right. Excuse me, Christopher Gattelli for Newsies, Stephen Auget for Once, and Kathleen Marshall for Nice Work If You Can Get It. Peter.
Christopher Gattelli, no question.
Yeah,
easy.
I hope so, and I think so.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Are we through, James, or do we have anything left?
I think we are through. Let me cut the categories.
Do you think maybe we should do best orchestrations?
I guess.
You know what's so funny, by the way, friends? Let me tell you this. I don't know what website you're looking at, but I'm looking at the Tony website where they list the nominees. And by the way, they've not done a good job in putting them in alphabetical order. Yes, they have if you do it by show. That's the way they've done it. In other words, I'm just looking at one for an example. Jeff Calhoun, Kathleen Marshall, John Tiffany, Diane Paulus. Now, that's not in alphabetical order. However, Newsies, Nice Work, Once, and Gershwin's Porgy and Bess counts. So that's the way they're listing them here. But here's the thing about best orchestrations. You know, they have a star next to Martin Lowe's name for Once, and they already say winner. They say that it must be a misprint. Mustn't it? Do they do something we don't? It'll be very interesting next week to see if Martin Lowe wins for best orchestrations for
Once. Sorry, where are you reading that?
The Tony website. I apologize. The IBDB website, where if you click under awards at the top of the banner there, home, shows, people, theater, characters, awards.
You sure it doesn't mean Drama Desk? Because he won the Drama Desk.
Well, I'm looking at this Tony site right here, I swear. And they have stars next to a number of names. They have stars next to Actors Equity, you know, Freddie Gershon, TDF Open Doors, you know, Bernadette Peters, Manny Eisenberg, etc. But there is a star next to Martin Lowe's name for Once. So, and what's also interesting is, again, this alphabetical thing. They really have picked him out as the winner. There's even in parentheses, winner. You know, so they have the star, they have the winner there. Wow. And I guess this is a mistake. I guess. Yeah, because really the voting isn't even done yet, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you still have this week to vote.
Must be a mistake.
But nevertheless.
All right. So best orchestrations. We have Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Nice Work If You Can Get It, Once in Newsies. Michael, what do you think?
Well, again, for the record, Martin Lowe won the Drama Desk for Once after that huge kerfuffle where they at first eliminated the category, and then there was a huge outcry, rightly so, and then they reinstated the category and came up with five or six excellent nominees. So Martin Lowe won the Drama Desk. As much as I deplore Nice Work If You Can Get It, I actually thought Bill Elliott's orchestrations were excellent. So I don't object to that nomination. The William David Braun and Christopher Janke or whatever, on the other hand, should again join the others in the hoosgow for what they did to Porgy and Bess.
You know, a good image you could use is the Christian Bull makes them walk the plank. Maybe that's what you should use
that's
for,
a good
as your
one.
Image this year for people you don't think should get nominations.
And the Newsies orchestrations, Danny Troob, they were fine.
Danny Troob's a marvelous orchestrator. He really is. He's one of the best. So I guess we're going to get in trouble now because we're wrapping up and we're not going to deal with the sets, costumes, lighting, sound, all that kind of stuff. But we're tuckered, aren't we?
Well, I want, you know, I would tell everybody that what we will do is we'll cover the rest of those next week. Next Monday, we'll give our predictions. It's much easier to predict after the actual event.
Yes. Monday, Tony quarterbacking, right.
Yeah. Yes. But of course, we will not be joining everybody next Sunday because that's the actual Tony Awards. But we will come back and record on Monday night. So look for us on Tuesday. Anything else to add? Peter, you have your Theater World Awards tomorrow. Everybody know their lines?
I'm still learning mine. I have a pretty good idea of what I'll say tomorrow at the Belasco Theater at 2 o'clock.
Excellent. Michael, what's your week look like?
You know, I'm seeing Murder in the First at 59 East 59 tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that because that sounds really interesting. But not much else. Pretty quiet for the next week or so.
Great. Well, we're running very long, so I just want to let everybody know that you can find all of our stuff at BroadwayRadio.com. So there's that. So on behalf of Peter Felicia, who's got guests in town, and thank you so much for joining us after your rehearsal for Theater World tonight, and for Michael Portantier, who came back from, were you in P-Town or where were you?
That's right.
You were in P-Town and came back just to record for us. Thank you so much again, and we will speak to you all next Monday night after the Tony Awards, and everybody have a great week.
Good night.
Good night.
And here's a handsome and dashing leading man, Mr. Frank Butler.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. How you worried using half the night off, waiting till the morning papers came. What a moment when your face would light up to see the write-up and find your name.
Here's Frank Butler's fearless assistant, the lovely Miss Dolly Tate.
The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum.
The closing when the customers don't come.